One begins the eternal learning curve. The more you know, the more you realize you have more to learn.
At the end of the day, you can be as good as gold, but if you don't have passion for wine, no matter how good you are, it isn't going to work.
And Mother Nature is your partner all the way until it's done.
Whereas the U.S., you go into a big grocery store and you have 2,000 different glass bottles full of wine.
My father told me, never work for money. Work to accomplish something. Making money is the result of doing something right.
The bottom line is, it's all about the soil.
Well, the results are really the benefit of our doing our homework.
What makes winemaking so interesting and fascinating is that every single year it's been different.
There was definitely a sense that we were all sort of in a pioneering endeavor. It was fun.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 104. This month we'll be featuring programs that go back to the very beginning of Life Between the Vines. And in particular, this week, we feature Jean Ophir, winemaker for Alpha Omega Winery in Rutherford, California. Jean originally was featured in podcast number 7, which ran in June of 2009. At that time, our podcast had only been around for just a year. Back then, we ran 3 interviews per podcast. Of course, things have progressed a bit since then. So we invite you to help us bring in the new year by revisiting the old. Cheers. The first time we visited Alpha Omega, they were in the middle of building a brand new tasting room in the town of Rutherford, in the heart of Napa Valley. By harvest time, the new room was completed and welcoming guests. Jean Ophir is winemaker at Alpha Omega, and he was kind enough to give me a lesson in proper pronunciation of his name.
Jean Ophir is very easy. You know, good luck pronouncing that.
Jean Ophir.
Almost Jean Ophir.
I interviewed Jean during the harvest of 2008 on the front lawn of the winery where, around the corner, workers were hand-sorting beautiful Cabernet grapes. Jean, tell me where you're from and what got you into wine.
I was born in Lausanne, Switzerland, which is the western part of Switzerland, the French-speaking part, from an American mother and a Swiss father. I started actually in law school there and went through 2 years of law school and suddenly woke up and decided to do something better to me. And so I went into wealth management. And after a year and a half, I was spending 100% of my salary in wine. So I decided that doesn't really sound logical, and I really enjoy and looking forward to tasting wine. Why am I doing wealth management? So I decided to go knock on my godfather's door, who owns a winery in Switzerland, and did an internship as a cellar worker there, and really enjoyed the contact with wine and the balance between science and art. In the sense that you have lab, you run tests, but for me, it all comes back to taste, to emotion. I always say my biggest goal in my wines is to create an emotion in people. So I actually decided from then on to travel in order to learn a little bit more than just Swiss wine. Went to California. I worked at Michel Schlumberger for a while, Hartford Court, as a night cellar master. Then I went to Bordeaux at Chateau Carbonieu and Mirlis down in South Africa. And at that time, I had enough field experience to really get a touch and a feel of what I was supposed to do. I lacked of true knowledge and theoretical knowledge. So I've decided to go to winemaking school and in Switzerland. And I went through my viticulture and winemaking degree over there and passed it and enjoyed it a lot. And after that, I went back and worked at Lynchbach in Bordeaux again during the 2000-2001 year. And I was kind of limited in the type of expression I wanted to have in wine. And the reason for that is in Europe, in most countries, and definitely in France, winemaking is regulated by a lot of different laws and traditions that, to me, limits your ability and capacity to create something that you want and the best product, best wine that you want. So, I mean, I always say for me, it's kind of giving Picasso half of the color to paint a masterpiece. What's the point, you know? So I decided to come back here where regulations are in place, but it's always in order to maximize the client, the customers, and the drinker's safety or the quality of the wine. So I came back in 2001, at Harvest 2001, and started being the winemaker up at Newton, where I stayed for 5 years. And during that process, was approached by the two managing partners here, Eric Sklar and Robin Baggett, to start that, you know, the Alpha Omega project. They knocked on my door one day and said, oh, you've been making wine quite successfully up there for a while. We would like to know if you would like to join that new project. And of course, it's interesting. What volume are we looking at? 8,000-10,000 cases, very limited. Like, oh, that sounds interesting. Where's that project? Well, I'm not going to tell you really where it is. I'm going to show it. So let's meet, you know, on Wednesday. Okay. And I came here, and this winery that formerly was Quail Ridge, Esquisse, Domaine Napa to start with in 85, and saw that and got really afraid. Because nothing in this entire building or vineyard was up to the standards of quality wine I wanted to produce.
So what did you call it back then?
The Super Dome. I mean, it was just not the type of environment I wanted. So I said, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going to join your project. And they came back to me and said, okay, if we guarantee you in your contract that you don't have any limits on winemaking, viticulture, or whatever touches quality of the product, would you accept? And I said, yeah, I would probably. So they said, okay, deal. You have no limitation. So the first thing I started to do is making wine for them off premise. And while searching for different vineyards, I went and knocked on a couple of doors and, you know, tried to meet people that I knew had great vineyard that would really express what I was looking for, and actually ended up having vineyards in every single appellation of Napa Valley. The reason why is that I believe that wine benefits, like society, from diversity. And by having all these different profiles of wine, or vineyard, soils, climate, when you make them separately and understand their personality, when you sit down to blend them, you have just more possibilities and more different type of wine. And that philosophy is translated all the way to the winemaking, in the sense that I go in every single one of these vineyards at least once a week. Closer to harvest, it's 3 or 4 times a week to taste, to measure, to understand how they react to climatic changes, to different vintages. And when they come and they're picked in these yellow boxes, very small, very protected, they're sorted to the berry and they go in the tank or the barrel. I have to adapt to their personality and not the opposite. My philosophy is, if I adapt myself to the wine and to the grapes and to nature, I will be able to maximize the potential in a much easier way. And that was really, you know, the philosophy that I tried to start with the owners when we first started. I said, okay, I have carte blanche, that's perfect. It's going to cost you. And so we started having vineyards, Toquelon, Stagecoach, Newton, Hudson down in Carneros and stuff like that. No problem. Started renovating this building, make it up to standards, ordering new material, sorting tables, new tanks. And they started bills, just seeing bills come in. And not inexpensive bills. Up to today, I've never been denied one penny for anything that touches production. Everything within these boundaries, I can have. It really kind of made me feel good and really let me want to jump in that project, because for me it was freedom of expression. Just like a writer, press, a painter, go ahead. You have all the tools you want. Express yourself the way you want. And for me it was a real blessing to be able to encounter this type of philosophy, I have to say. That's why I'm still here, and that's why, you know, 14, 15 hours per day for 4 months, because of course when you do these type of wines, naturally fermented wines, fermentation lasts for much longer. And it's also the time of the year where the relationship between the grape and the wine and me starts. It's a dialogue. It's a day-to-day dialogue from the vineyard. I'm not ready, you know. I still want to stay out there. I'm still a little green, a little edgy and stuff like that. To the final product, hopefully, if I do my job right at understanding the profile and the personality of the wine, where it says, okay, now I'm smooth, I've matured, I've balanced and stuff like that. It's ready to go to barrel and age there. So I always compare a lot that process with life, with relationship with people, with respect with people. I respect the grapes. I try to respect the grapes. And hopefully they'll respect me. If they don't, then we're going to start having problems.
John, what's your approach to winemaking?
Most winemaker, most companies, they apply the same recipe to whatever grapes they get and whatever year. For me, wine is made 90% in the vineyard. Therefore, it's to us to understand what nature is telling winemakers. From the vineyard all the way to the tank. Vineyard, okay, understand a vine. A vine, if it carries 50 pounds of grapes, is gonna struggle. It's not gonna maximize its own potential. If you put 50 pounds on my back and tell me to go climb Mount St. Helena, it's going to be definitely harder than without 50 pounds. That's the same principle on any vine, I think. So for me, that balance is really, really important. And I try to protect that character, that individuality in their personality, all the way to the end product, in the sense that I do naturally fermented wines, I do unfined and unfiltered wines, to respect these differences, to respect what nature is bringing me. Why would I add yeast when it's already provided by nature? Probably at a higher diversity. There's more different type of yeast on a single berry outside in the vineyard than if you inoculate with an industrial strain of yeast, which gives you one strain of yeast. Well, I like, once again, the diversity and the complexity. That's my thing. And why would you have to readjust later in your process by fining if you taste the way I do every day, every lot, to adapt the extraction and the winemaking process to the wine and not the opposite?
Considering you've been able to make use of many resources, the bottom line is the whole process can scare the heck out of you.
Of course. I mean, there's a lot of things that I think you learn in wine over the years. You know, making wine, you have one shot per year. It's not a lot. One shot per year at something is not, you know, a lifetime of this is probably, for me, I'm 35, another, you know, 40 times if I'm lucky. That's 40 times. It's not a lot to readjust what you want. So yes, it is very scary. And the type of philosophy that I have by, you know, doing these naturally fermented is definitely more risky as well. You know, you have more risk. It's, you don't have a lot of safety nets and stuff like that. But what does it translate to? The love of what you do. By going and tasting the wine through the entire process on a daily basis, you control it. You control that the emotion that this wine creates within you is in boundaries of what you want. And if it doesn't, well, you have tools to hopefully change that and put it back in the right way. It is risky, no doubt. The more you learn, the more you know how much you don't know. And therefore, you get a little bit of wisdom, even in a passionate guy like me, that says, we'll be fine, we'll be all right. And you know, I think that wine taught me a big thing as well. It's a live product, it changes. It varies, not only during fermentation, maceration, but during aging in a bottle. Just like individuals, we're all different. Well, same with wine, it changes. And you know, going through these phases and going through these sometimes hard time where the wines retract itself and expresses more tannins and acidity than the beautiful silky body that you were looking for at their time and, you know, at the time in their life, is exactly like a human being going through a really tough time in his life because of health reasons, professional reasons and stuff like that. But hopefully nature makes the wine grows back to its full potential. The same way I think a man has a natural survival instinct to grow back to happiness. And that's what I try to, you know, put into the wine, is that heart, passion, and emotion. And the worst, my worst nightmare is somebody that tastes my wine says, and goes on. I'd rather have somebody look at me and say, I don't like it, because it creates an emotion, good or bad. I've done my job if it creates an emotion. And that's really the philosophy behind it. Yeah, it's kind of scary sometimes, no doubt.
This is the end of part one of podcast number 104. Download part two from lifebetweenthevines.com or by visiting iTunes.